Happy hour! The penultimate happy hour of the week before the extended Labor Day vacation holiday, extended massively long, huge weekend. The Glass in the Afternoon radio program. New Sports Talk 98.7 AM 1370 and WGCLradio.com, wherever you may be listening on the third day of September. Thank you for being with us. It is warm. It is humid. It feels like summertime in Bloomington, even though we are in the month of September. That's part of the fun we get. And 84 downtown, we thought it might nip up there, but the humidity's dropping. That's the good news. We're down to 50%. It feels like 86, so it is not terrible at all. Get out and enjoy your parklets and closed Kirkwood running east and west. Support your local merchants if you can. There's plenty of ways to get out and dine and enjoy it if that's something you're into. It should be a very, very busy tonight, tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, and who knows what it'll be. Monday's the warmest of the bunch, but tomorrow, 78 and 55, no chance of rain. 82 and 59 on Saturday, no chance of rain. 84 on Sunday, 87 on Monday. The radar is cleared up. That's not surprising. We told you things evaporate when they move in this direction, but you can pay attention and check out which day part, which day of the Labor Day holiday weekend you need to check out. Do so at WGCLradio.com. Tennis happening, the U.S. Open in the background. No upsets today as Batista Agut wins in four sets. Rublev in straight sets. Team 3-3 and 2 as they cruise on. Andy Murray will go a little bit later tonight. So will Serena Williams and Madison Keys. Those are your evening and afternoon games at the U.S. Tennis Center. Speaking of games, no game 7 tonight. First in 3 nights, we don't have to deal with that. Last night, Houston beats Oklahoma City to move on. Tonight, we get Game 3 of the Eastern Conference semis. The Toronto Raptors, the 2 seed, are trailing Love 2 to Boston. The Celtics and Brad Stevens playing some solid basketball, 6:30 tip time there. And then that'll be followed by Game 1 of the Western Conference semifinals. Denver, who knocked off the Jazz in Game 7 two nights ago, will take on former Pacer Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and the Los Angeles Clippers. That is your matchup this evening, 6:30 and 9 p.m. Little day baseball to get you caught up on. No Reds today. Reds were winners last night. Joey Votto's walk-off RBI single in the bottom of the ninth broke up a three-game losing streak for the Kings of the Ohio. They got a good pitching outing from Tyler Mahle. Raisel Iglesias in a non-save situation came in and took care of business. The Reds head to Pittsburgh. They will play 4 games in 3 days, starting with a doubleheader tomorrow night. We will have them for the radio on Saturday starting at 7 o'clock and then Sunday 1:30 from the confluence of the Three Rivers PNC Park in Pittsburgh. Tomorrow night, as you know, high school football, Terre Haute North and Bloomington South. Our first visit to the South Side this season, the first visit with the Panthers. New coach Gabe Johnson, 1-1. He'll sit down and talk with Joe Smith at 7 o'clock. Panthers and Patriots, 7:30 kickoff, Terre Haute, both Terre Haute schools in town playing the city schools, North and South, North and South. We are on the South Side, purple and white, covering all three of our county schools. We had North in week 1, Edgewood in week 2, and now South in week 3. And then we'll get together, fingers crossed, next Friday night. North and South will be the get together. That's at Bloomington North. And we hope that game goes on. We hope all of the games go on. It's going to be senior night regardless at North and South this week and then Edgewood next week, making sure to get all those T's crossed and I's dotted. Quick run of the MLB scoreboard, 6-4 Astros over Rangers, bottom of 8. Phillies beating the Nationals 3-2, bottom of 3. Yankees over the Mets 4-1, bottom of the 2nd. Pirates beat the Cubs 6-2. Bad news for Cub fans. Ian Happ took a foul ball off his face and had to leave the game. Ouch. That doesn't feel any good. And speaking of baseball, on the Skype with us, is our great friend from the Indianapolis Star, the beat writer for Indiana basketball and football, Zach Osterman. Your Braves hit a few home runs yesterday and the day before. My goodness, Do you know the deep clover that they got into with the three home runs? Are you aware of these statistical anomalies that are happening?
Yeah, I think what the first team in Major League history to have two players hit three home runs in back-to-back games.
That is official. And the other part of that that is tremendously interesting is they're the first two teammates to do so since you might have heard of these guys, Gehrig and Ruth. That's some tall cotton to be in the baseball world. Anytime you have a stat that is mentioned with Ruth and Gehrig, you know you've done something amazingly well. Your home run hitters were former Red Adam Duvall. And who was the other one that joined him?
Marcelo Zuna.
The former Cardinal, correct?
Former Cardinal, former Marlin.
Oh, that's right.
Who was a big free agent pickup in the offseason, kind of a Josh Donaldson replacement.
So he is doing his job for you. Sadly involved with that was a former Hoosier that was involved. Kyle Hart went to the DL today. He's got a hip deal. But the Red Sox have given him multiple chances. He got caught in the crossfire there. How about that?
Yeah, well, and I think there was a suggestion. He had a decent first inning. He pitched two innings of relief. I think there was a suggestion on the broadcast that he may have suffered the hip impingement between or somewhere in inning one, and so he kind of tried to go out and pitch back through inning two. And I know the Red Sox are obviously having a bad season right now. I think anybody who's ever seen their baseball team go through a bad year knows that it just feels like everything that can go wrong does go wrong.
And since it's the Red Sox, I don't feel terrible about that, but I get it. I've been there, and we've all done that. So big performances yesterday. And again, anytime you share a stat line with Gehrig and Ruth on everything, you are doing something that is very rare, record-breaking, and it doesn't mean you're going to join them perhaps in history, but to have your name mentioned in that group is nothing short of strong. In other baseball news, sadly, Tom Seaver passes away. Did you see what the Mets are doing today to honor Tom Seaver? I thought that was pretty cool.
I didn't. Are they going to leave their pitcher in for all nine innings?
Well, and Tom Seaver, you know what? He led the league in wins one year with 15, or 14. If that tells you anything about how it used to be. They all got their right knees dirty because Tom Seaver was known for getting that knee so low to the ground and wearing out his driving leg. So the Mets honored him with that today. They're losing to the Yankees, which isn't terribly surprising, but pretty cool. Pretty cool deal there, acknowledging some of the history of the game, because we know there's been plenty of it. Seaver is one of 10 pitchers with 300 wins and 3,000 strikeouts. That's pretty good company overall. And sadly, at 75 years of age, he has passed away. So baseball losing another legend. College basketball has lost a couple legendary coaches since we've spoken last. Lute Olson and John Thompson have both passed away, and that's never fun to talk about. So obviously Lute Olson being in the Big Ten, last coach to take Iowa to a Final Four, that might win you a little bar bet later in the weekend.
Good Lord, I can't unmute my microphone here.
You'll be all right.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I saw the statistic floating around that Lute Olson actually beat John Thompson to get to his first Final Four.
Oh, that's a fantastic connector.
When he was right with there. Iowa, I think it was maybe 1980, and then of course
yes,
Thompson has that wonderful run from about 82 to 85, where he plays for what, two national championship games and wins a third and
three of them. Played three title games. You have to go back to 83 and see who knocked them out, because that was the year of Akeem Olajuwon, Derek Wittenberg's shot for NC State, Georgia with Vern Fleming, as you will remember, and Louisville, I believe, was the other team there. So somebody had to beat Patrick Ewing in his sophomore year, but Ewing and Georgetown to the title game in 82. Champions in 84, and again 85, another historic game, losing into essentially the perfect game that Harold Jensen and Villanova threw at him.
Yeah, there's a lot that's been said and written about John Thompson in particular. Not that anyone wants to slight Lute Olson, but I think Thompson was a really seminal figure in the history of the sport.
Absolutely,
you know, some agree. Of the stands he took on social issues, racial issues. You know, some of the sort of stories you've heard of what he was like away from the court. And I don't I won't speak on that stuff because, I mean, I was born in 87. I can only kind of remember the last years of John Thompson's Georgetown career. I will say one thing that really strikes me, and, you know, I don't know if there are any Georgetown basketball fans listening who might be offended by this. I sometimes sort of have this internal conversation with myself, just sort of wondering which – in fact, I even posed it to you last night. You know, are there going to be college football, college basketball programs that in you know, 18 years I have to explain to my 2-year-old son that they used to be really, really good? And, you know, it feels a little bit like Georgetown is one of those, but I think that it, in a way, it almost – like I don't think people even now appreciate what Georgetown basketball was in the 1980s. Like, I mean, for a small private Jesuit school with an elite student population, both academically and in many cases also sort of, you know, socioeconomically. Yeah. And when I say elite, I'm not just talking about kids who went to private schools. Like, think about who in Washington, who lives in Washington, D.C. and is rich.
Everybody.
And would likely send their child to Georgetown. You're talking about politicians. You're talking about diplomats. You're talking about, you know, I mean, executives and people like that. And to build what John Thompson built at a school like that, and I think people also lose sight of the fact he was hired as a high school coach. He was a high school coach that Georgetown hired to be its head men's basketball coach, unless I'm mistaken. And so it's not like there was this ramp up of his career where you could say, well, an example that comes to mind would be like Tubby Smith, where Tubby Smith was at what, Tulsa, and did very well. And then, and Georgia did very well.
Worked his way up
Bill Self, same thing. Worked his, you know, there was no ramp up of that for John Thompson. He went from coaching at the high school level to coaching at Georgetown, to building Georgetown into, alongside Bob Knight's Indiana and Dean Smith's North Carolina, one of the, not just one of the best teams in the country, but one of the most sort of, I guess, culturally associated, you know, iconic programs. Like, if you thought college basketball, you thought Indiana, North Carolina, Georgetown.
And the other thing that
helped, in the same way that right now you'd think Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, maybe Villanova.
The other thing that helped springboard that forward was obviously the creation of the Big East late in the 1970s. And anytime the Big East was on, and we talked about this last week a little bit, Big Monday, you were force-fed on ESPN every Monday night a premier marquee game from that league. And every, you know, two out of every three games was Georgetown versus somebody because, number one, they were good. Syracuse, you had the St. John's great teams, the great Villanova teams. That was the early 80s, mid-80s, late 80s, the Halcyon days of basketball in the Big East. And they were on national TV every time. And Georgetown had a team of all-black players, which at the time, that wasn't the case at all. And John Thompson was never apologetic about that. He made sure that everybody knew exactly how he was bettering the lives of those people at the school, giving them a chance through basketball. But, you know, they had the gray jerseys, and they had the high-top shoes, and they had the Nike colors, and they had everything that went with it, and they were either loved or hated, a little bit like University of Miami football during the 80s as well. They were brash. Outspoken, they could play, and they won. They had big time players, and that is very difficult to replicate. Or, as we've seen, perhaps at Indiana University or Miami football, nothing lasts forever. No dynasties last forever, and that was definitely, when you mention Big East, the first thing you say is John Thompson or Jim Boeheim, in my opinion, and work back from there. And the reason why it wasn't a gimmick. It was a basketball team that got big-time recruits, sent guys to the NBA. You can rattle off the Georgetown guys off the top of your head.
I mean, some of this is just related to the fact that Georgetown basketball, you know, really probably kind of, if we're talking about the best years under John Thompson, certainly peaked in the 80s and obviously had a few good, very, very good years under his son, but maybe never quite at that, at this level. But, like, I don't think if you sat people down that would, you know, the average like college basketball fan, maybe my age, and you said, can you name, you know, the five best play Georgetown players of the John Thompson era?
You should be like able to really easily, in my opinion.
But I don't know that people would. Like, my point is, I don't think people appreciate it.
Okay.
I think it has gotten lost a little bit to time in the way that, like, for my generation, which I'm now 33 years old, so like I'm no longer the target demographic of get them in the behavior now so that when they get old and they have, you know, and they can exercise more discretionary spending, they'll come back to us and spend on whatever product we're selling. I'm there now.
Yeah.
And I think if you told someone that, like, if you said who went to Georgetown, I think they'd certainly know Iverson. They'd probably know Ewing, although I think more people would forget that than perhaps we realize, just because I think Patrick Ewing has just become so synonymous with the Knicks that it's almost like there was no Patrick Ewing before he pulled on a Knicks jersey, and there was no Patrick Ewing after he pulled it off for the last time to some
Patrick
people.
Patrick Ewing was interesting because he stayed in college all 4 years. And
yeah.
That's why he was great all four years.
It wasn't like he erupted.
Well, that's why he sticks to Georgetown for me, because he stayed all 4 years. Alonzo Mourning stayed all 4 years. Could you believe that? In that day and age.
And even think about, like, I don't know how many people would realize Dikembe Mutombo went to Georgetown.
Because they play with Mourning, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a remarkable thing, and you brought up kind of the halcyon days of the Big East. I mean, think about the coaches that were in the league back then. Think
Carnesecca,
about
Carnesecca, Raleigh.
Yeah, Raleigh Massimino.
Pitino.
I think that was around the time. Did you say Pitino?
Oh, absolutely. But Providence.
Yeah, Rick Pitino was at Providence. You've got John Thompson at Georgetown. You've got Jim Calhoun at
UConn. PJ Carlissimo at Seton Hall.
I mean, it's just remarkable.
And that was, yeah. And again, it was force fed to you. If you were a basketball fan growing up, it doesn't matter what age you were, Big Monday was the Big East game at 7, and at 9:25 was the game for the Big Ten. And that was Monday nights for a good portion of the 80s. And that's just how it went. So even if you weren't a fan, you were going to tune in and watch the game, getting ready for your game to come on a little bit later. With the Big Ten, and that was back in the day of daylight savings time, probably, where it didn't start that late, but it felt like it was that late. So John Thompson and Lute Olson, last coach to take Iowa to a Final Four, same year that Lee Rose took Purdue, the last Purdue team to go to the Final Four. So sad news for the world of college basketball. But you're right, you look back and you say those teams, the culture that they presented, the style of basketball that they played was revolutionary in more than one aspect. That's definitely inarguable. And John Thompson passes away. Was that on Sunday or Monday morning at the age of 78? Zach Osterman's our guest. He always checks in from the Indianapolis Star. And as always, the Twitterverse is light with information and stuff going on. We'll get to football here in a little bit. I'll save that for later because I want to talk to you about what you heard from Aaron Wellman, the new strength and conditioning coach for Indiana University. I know he met with the media earlier in the week. But John Rothstein, who usually has pretty good information, we're not going to Maui. We're going to North Carolina?
That sounds like one thing that's being considered. I mean, listen, people have been asking about stuff like the Maui Invitational for – the last 5 months. And I think it's important to say, you know, it's important to kind of lay the backdrop of this, which is, number one, we don't have a firm start date to the season. It sounds like the recommended date is going to be November 25th, which would run right into that Thanksgiving, you know, exempt tournament.
Now, who recommends sort of that date?
It was recommended, I think, to the Division I Council, and I forgive me, I get lost and have gotten increasingly lost in the NCAA power structures, over the last 5 months, just because things have bounced from one layer to another. But basically, it was recommended, and I'll look for it as we kind of speak.
It's not
but it was
the end
recommended
of the world.
To, I believe, the Division I Council as sort of the recommended start date for the coming season. You know, that there's been a lot of talk about starting around Thanksgiving, maybe potentially giving giving times or giving giving you know regular students a chance to get off campus and that sort of thing. But I think that broadly speaking, it's important when we talk about anything like a location for the Maui Invitational to say we don't know when the season's going to start yet. It's very possible that the start date of this season will run into these tournaments and either change their format or possibly preclude them from happening. There are still people who believe that there's the best way forward for a basketball season is going to be conference only. There's a lot that, you know, there's a lot that's going to be outside of the Maui Invitational's control with regard to whether or not it actually happens this year.
Yeah. And the interesting,
but this is, I think, Maui being proactive in a number of senses. One, ease of travel. Two, presumably saves everybody some money.
A lot of
money. Because I think
money.
Yeah, I think that was probably going to be one of the biggest sort of intangible criticisms of Maui or Battle for Atlantis or whatever. And I know, like, for example, I think Purdue was supposed to play a tournament either in the Caymans or I think it was in Cancun, and it's already been moved to Florida.
Correct. A couple of those have been moved.
And so the idea is, listen, you know, everybody's cutting costs across the board. And of course, playing basketball is going to make people money back, but maybe we need to find a way to be a little bit more thrifty. And the other thing too, is you need to try and create contingencies, because it's hard. You can't just simply say, well, we couldn't hold the 2020 Maui Invitational this year. That's unfortunate. We'll just push this year back to next year and next year's field back to 2022. When Indiana went to Maui in 2015 at a fan event the Sunday night that they were in Maui, Tom Crean said, we'll be back here in 2020. He already knew in 2015 I don't know if there was a signed notarized contract to that effect at that point. But what I'm getting at is these things are planned out so far in advance that you can't just simply say, well, we'll just shove everything back a year. I don't know exactly how complicated it would be, but it would be more complicated than that to find a way to get this Maui field, which also, by the way, may or may not include Stanford, because the Pac-12 has called off all sports until January 1. But now there's reports coming out of the West Coast saying that they're working to try and sync up with a college basketball calendar, if it were to start before the new year. So you don't know if Stanford can be in the field. All I'm trying to say is this is really interesting. I'd heard, I think this had kind of made the rounds in college basketball circles this week. Hey, you know, some of these bigger tournaments are starting to examine alternate sites that might be a little bit more scaled down and might make, you know, a bubble or something like that a little bit easier. And I think Asheville had been mentioned next to Maui. That's when John tweeted the first time that Asheville was a site that college basketball was looking at as a possible bubble. I retweeted and said, hey, keep an eye on this, because I didn't want to sit there and report something I couldn't confirm. But there was a feeling that it was headed that way. And then I think basically an hour later, John Rothstein reports that the Maui Invitational is looking at Asheville as a potential alternate site. That's important. And it's noteworthy that you're seeing these events, these tournaments, try to plan ahead. I would also just caution against saying, oh, well, it's in Asheville now, so it's all solved, we're good. Because there are going to be other logistical challenges that need to be overcome.
But what it brings is hope. And I think we could all use a dose of that instead of hearing the doom and gloom that everything's canceled. Well, there are alternative plans. And hopefully, I don't know when the drop-dead dates on any of these contracts or anything else is going on, but it's nice to hear that the conversation is still churning about trying to get some things done. We know this week that the NCAA is going to furlough 600 of its employees up the road in Indianapolis for 3 to 8 weeks, depending on their jobs. There is nobody who wants to have a tournament more than the NCAA Men's Basketball Committee, because they know how much money they have lost, and look what it's doing to their organization. So this misplaced theory that no one wants sports to happen is just that, misplaced.
And I think it's important you bring up the NCAA there. And I wrote something that I think may have gotten lost in the ether and never published. You know, the NCAA is very much sort of ridden shotgun on a lot of the football stuff. And as you and I think have talked about at different times, that is because the NCAA is not as directly in control of football. The NCAA doesn't control the bowl structure. It doesn't control the conference championship games. And while obviously it has a role, it is not the sort of governing force over the playoff. But as you talk about there, the NCAA tournament is both the moneymaker for the association every year by many orders of magnitude, and is also their signature event. You know, football is increasingly sort of the domain of the conferences.
Right.
Basketball, while the conferences, of course, still have a lot of power, they draw up their own schedules, they organize their own tournaments, et cetera. The NCAA is much more of a final authority in basketball as it relates to the day-to-day, you know, happening of a season, let's say, than it is football. And so I think, you know, I mean, we could go down a rabbit hole of theories about, you know, does the NCAA fear, you know, its power is somehow weakened if it loses two straight men's basketball tournaments, and all of a sudden maybe some of the bigger football schools say, oh, we don't want to go. You know, we don't feel so tethered to this anymore. I think that can get a little bit, we can get a little bit in the weeds with that. But both from a financial perspective and also just from sort of a cultural organizational perspective, the basketball tournament is going to be something that the NCAA can be a lot more hands-on about and needs to be a lot more hands-on about.
Especially when that's all their money comes in the front door. We know that's the case, and they've already seen what happens when they don't get it once. So there is no hemming and hawing about, well, maybe we can need them. No, you've seen the ramifications when the tournament is not put on. Ticket sales, broadcast rights, every T-shirt that goes along with it. I've worked 100 NCAA events in my life for multiple sports, and all the things. Go here for these ticket plans. Go here for these travel packages. Go here to buy your official and it adds up. And it adds up to a lot of money, and there is no way, in my opinion, they will, unless this virus turns even worse, there is no way that they can shelf that for 2 years in a row. They will be in deep, deep, deep trouble. Zach Osterman's our guest. What does Archie Miller say about the basketball season? I know he met with you guys a couple weeks ago, and this is all fluid. Did he have any insight on, hey, we're aiming for Thanksgiving, but if we have to wait till the new year, how do you even organize practice these days?
Yeah, well, I mean, for the moment, it's worth saying that for the moment,
that's what everything,
you know,
should be prefaced.
Nothing
with these
about
days.
Preseason has been disrupted for basketball,
now, which is good.
It will be if you push the start of the season back. But, you know, we didn't have Indiana's first official game date down, but my guess is the season was going to begin on November 10th. I believe that was the start of the season, the second Tuesday in November, which meant that from Indiana's perspective, you could have begun practice, assuming your first game was on the 10th, I believe, on September 29th. So we're still a ways away from you know, basketball being completely corrupted now. The question is what I think really more the question will be, what happens if/when they push the start of the season back a couple weeks? Do you let your you know, do you give your programs a slightly more structured off season? I don't know, or I shouldn't say off season, but kind of brief preseason, or do you just tell them, hey, you know, you do what, just keep doing what you always do around this time of year, which is, you know, some of the weightlifting. I think there's possibly a small amount of instruction allowed, and then a lot of open gyms and just a lot of, as I said, there, preseason, where it's not quite your preseason yet in terms of how much you can practice and how much you'd be on the court and how you gear up for the season. But it's very much not the summer either. There's, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Everyone understands there's an urgency, and everyone understands that the season is kind of just around the corner. You know, I mean, the thing that Archie said that really kind of stuck with us when we talked to him was just that he said he'd be shocked if there wasn't a season. It would just be a question of what it looked like when it started. His words were, you know, I would be shocked if there is not a season of some kind. So, you know, I think, again, it is worth saying, as we talk about the NCAA taking, you know, needing to take that more hands-on role, you know, one of the things that we said about college football that really kind of harmed college football was that there was no sort of unified decision-making structure that flowed everything into one person or one small body of people that could kind of, you know, make all of those calls in a more sort of unilateral way You do have that a little bit more now with basketball. Again, the conferences are going to be involved, and you know, there's, it's also worth saying there are a lot more logistics because you have 350 some odd basketball teams as opposed to 125 football teams. But at the same time, you may benefit not just from being able to sort of chart football's successes and failures, but also from having a leadership structure that maybe lends itself to a little bit more productivity and success in a time of crisis.
All right, take a quick break, my friend. Catch your breath. We appreciate you, Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, the beat writer for Hoosier football and basketball. And we will take a quick timeout, do some Network Indiana news. When we come back, the Pac-12 today, they made a big announcement about some, well, testing procedures that they looks like could be more frequent, perhaps daily. Maybe that changes their tune on what they're going to do with fall sports or basketball coming back before the first of the year. Who knows? Again, hope is a powerful tool. And we'll talk IU football. Aaron Wellman is the new strength and conditioning head honcho. What do you do? How do you keep guys in shape? Why will it take? And this was the most interesting part I thought I saw. Why it doesn't, you just can't turn a season on and off with the flip of a switch. It doesn't work that way physiologically. Zach will tell us about what he learned from the new strength and conditioning coordinator from Indiana University. Quick timeout for Network Indiana News. Back in 2 minutes. It's Glass in the Afternoon on a Thursday. 538 at WGCL, Glass in the Afternoon. One final time with you. Don't forget, Your Money with David Hayes follows us at 6 o'clock. No Reds tonight. They're off. No Reds tomorrow night because it's high school football. We're on the south side. Terre Haute North, number 12th, ranked and unbeaten, coming to town to take on the South Panthers. Gabe Johnson, year number one, picked up his first victory last weekend in Martinsville. The Panthers are 1-1. They'll have senior night. Chalk Talk with Coach Johnson and Joe Smith. 7 o'clock, notice a different time because our friends from Terre Haute are heading in this direction. Kickoff with Dave Novak and the Hall of Famer at 7:30, followed by Sports Talk, Bob Lovell. All the scores and highlights from around the state. That's a traditional Friday night development right here on WGCL. The Reds will return to action Saturday night at PNC Park in Pittsburgh, taking on the Pirates. That will be game three of a four-game series. Reds and Pirates will play a doubleheader tomorrow night, and then Saturday at 7, and we'll have Sunday for you as well, 1:30, little Labor Day baseball weekend. Very, very nice. Updated Reds schedules. Yeah, you can see it all, broadcast schedules, and our high school football schedule. Find it at WGCLradio.com. Every Thursday, Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star joins us. He's the beat writer for football and basketball, well, and a little soccer and a little baseball and everything else that goes along with Indiana University. And right now, well, there's nothing on the books, nothing scheduled, ready to go, but Aaron Wellman is the new strength and conditioning coach for Indiana University, and you guys had a chance to meet him earlier in the week. And I found it was interesting that as much as we want football to start right away, the human body, Zach, isn't designed for football to start right away.
I mean, it isn't designed to start any sport right away, much less one that is as physical and demanding and violent as football. And I was deeply amused at this report from earlier in the week, and I think it may have come from Dan Patrick. And I want to be clear, I'm not calling out Dan Patrick. I'm perhaps more calling out whoever the source he cited was, that we could see a resumption of Big Ten football as early as October 10th after the president had the call with Kevin Warren. For that to happen, I mean, just the – the sheer logistics of it, forget the whole idea of, oh, you're making this political, or you're cheering for the virus, or the presidents and chancellors are screwing over football. You know, forget the debate for a moment, for just the physical logistical capacity for that to happen, for you to give every Big Ten program the 4-week preseason that I think at minimum your coaches, your trainers, your doctors, everyone around your program would say you need after the chopped up nature of this offseason in the Big Ten. To give them those 4 weeks, you would have to start practicing next Saturday. So 9 days from now. That is just so thoroughly unrealistic when you consider Northwestern isn't even in class. Like, I don't know if Northwestern's football players are on campus or not, but their classes don't begin until the 16th. Iowa's currently shut down.
Until Tuesday, right?
Because of positive tests through at least Labor Day. And that's the way they phrased it. At least through September 7th. They're saying they will revisit it at that point. You've got campuses, including Indiana, dealing with spikes in positivity rates because of the sheer fact if you're going to bring thousands of kids back to your campus from, you know, all parts of the country and perhaps even in some cases the world, well, guess what? Some of them are going to be positive and they're going to bring that back with them. And so we've seen, for example, Indiana fighting this fight to figure out what to do with the Greek houses. Positivity rates have spiked badly in the Greek houses and the other communal living spaces. Like, I think what they're talking about is like Evan Scholars and Christian Student Fellowship. And they're now talking about potentially closing those houses down. And the idea that there is, you know, some cabal of Big Ten presidents and chancellors that have nothing better to do than sit around and say, well, we're gonna
stick
piss off
the
rival fans or screw with the election or do anything like that. We're just gonna sit here and not have football. Football could not be the further from some of these people's minds right now. They've got much more immediate problems to address. And then when you hear from somebody like Aaron Wellman, who is saying, yeah, I mean, he's talking about at least sort of a, well, I don't say at least because, you know, he talked about, he acknowledged again and again when we spoke to him earlier this week, the uncertainty about when a season starts. Now, it's also in saying that, it's also worth saying he never presented that as a positive. That's a negative for someone in his job because he needs to be able to work backward from the start of a season to say, okay, if we're going to start here, then we need to go back to here is when camp starts, which means here is when workouts need to start and on and on. For the moment, he's talking about an 8-week program. And that's where Indiana's head of strength and conditioning coach, who, by the way, was with the New York Giants for, what, 4 or 5 years at least before he came back to college.
That's right.
He's talking about 8 weeks minimum. Really, I shouldn't say minimum, but he's thinking right now in an 8-week program. And I don't want to misrepresent what he's saying, so I keep kind of correcting.
It goes to your bigger point, though, that who's leaking this information to the national broadcast media that this can happen in 4 or 5 weeks? It's somebody with an agenda. And this is, again, I don't care if it's Dan Patrick or whoever it is, but all these little bits and pieces of information, or you see who's got the leaks rolling, or you see who's got the ears of some of these people, because the math in this sense doesn't even make sense. But we're still trying to get this date out there to get things rolling.
Yeah, and I mean that again, I think really what we're seeing in that respect is people still pushing their own agendas, and I can't sit here and tell you who it is. You know, obviously I'm not reading other reporters' phones, so I can't tell you who these. You know, who's pushing what, but it's clear that it's still just kind of representative of a conference that, you know, in one respect, a conference that can't kind of get on the same page. In another respect, a conference that's not being allowed to. You know, it's been pointed out that, you know, Donald Trump didn't call Larry Scott, the commissioner of the Pac-12. And let's not even act like we're picking sides in this. Joe Biden put an aerial shot of Beaver Stadium in a political ad. You know, so like
everybody's involved.
Let's not act like both sides aren't playing kind of their end on this. But my point is, you know, the people aren't as worried about the Pac-12. I mean, they just aren't. And maybe that's harsh on the Pac-12, but it's clear. You know, so much of this discussion, unless the Pac-12 does something, as you and I speak right now, the Pac-12 has announced this rapid testing plan that it is implementing through a private company that it's contracted, and it sounds like it may help them get up and running a little bit sooner than they'd hoped, and on and on. But unless the Pac-12 does something like that, nobody's really talking about the Pac-12 because it doesn't make waves. The Big Ten does. The Big Ten has all these passionate fan bases. The Big Ten sparks a lot of debate. The Big Ten is – is going to be inexorably linked, I think, at this point, to the presidential election, rightly or wrongly. How about we stick to sports on that one, by the way?
Nah, I can't do that, can you?
Well, we've been telling people for years that we couldn't do that, and they said, no, you clearly can, until
unless it affects them personally, right?
The point is, the Big Ten, I think, in a way, the Big Ten is doing this to itself, but in a way, the Big Ten's also kind of been thrown into the river. Where no one else has, if that makes sense.
Well, it's interesting because the Pac-12 is talking about testing today, and the Big Ten today is talking about myocarditis.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You have two totally different ends of the spectrum there, and this is Penn State. I saw the director of athletics medicine there said, hey, look, we're noticing this here. Did Aaron Wellman get into that detail at all, or is this just too new of information? Not everybody's being tested the same way. Not everybody's being measured the same way. So we've got, hey, we're going to test here. That's a good thing. And over here, we've got 30 to 35% could have heart inflammation.
Yeah. To be honest, we talked to him a lot more about the logistics of kind of how he's managing things right now. And I think there are still a lot of those protocols in place that we talked about over the summer. And I think you're still seeing obviously, athletics, I think, is going to be even more potentially aggressive about things like contact tracing than the campus would be. Although I also, I have not experienced the campus system firsthand, so I don't want to, speak for it without knowing a little bit better. But, within athletics, I can't imagine from a coach's perspective a worse time to be trying to do your job as normal. There's worse times. There's times when you lose games. There's times when somebody gets fired. There's times when, tragically something happens to someone within your program. But I can't imagine a worse time to just be trying to operate as normal, because you don't know what you're working toward. The way that Aaron Wellman put it is, he said, we always have an end goal. No matter what, there's always, his quote was, there's always something looming. Spring ball is looming. We're getting these guys ready for spring ball. We're getting them, recovered from the last season, broken down, built back up, and then ready to go because it's not just about saying, well, let's cram as much strength work in as we can before we have to go practice. It's, hey, if we get these guys really physically ready to attack spring ball, they have a better spring ball. They become a better team. They come back to us better in the summer. They're more ready in the fall. So you're not just thinking about, trying to fill the little, if anyone's ever seen the United Way, thermometer,
right?
You're not just trying to fill that up as much as possible. You're trying to think about, okay, we get them ready for spring ball, so spring ball is as good as it can be, as quality as it can be, and everyone stays as healthy as they can. Then we'll send them away. Then we'll bring them back at the beginning of, late May, beginning of June. And that's when we start building for the season, which we know starts on this date, which means preseason camp starts on this date, which means we have this amount of time to achieve these objectives. The biggest problem everybody has right now is, there's nothing looming. Obviously, we'll play football again, but nobody knows when, and nobody knows what it'll look like. And, we asked Aaron Wellman about the possibility of playing two seasons in one calendar year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
He just gave an honest answer and said, to be honest with you, that would be concerning. That would be a big concern, because we don't know how to train college kids for that. And then you ask, well, what if you played 2 8-game schedules as opposed to maybe an 8 and a 12 or an 8 and an 11? But then it just sort of deepens this sense of uncertainty that I just don't know. I know that people are navigating around it as best they can. And I think that the ones that are really able to block out what they can't control, just like as in any of our lives right now, the people that are handling this best are probably the people that are able to block out what they can't control. They're the ones that are operating the most efficiently. They're the ones that are probably having the most success at this given time. But there's nothing looming. That's the point he was making. That's the way he said it. There's nothing looming. There's no end date. There's no final goal. There's no way to say, what happens if Let me ask you this question then. From here takes us to what, the week before Halloween?
Sure.
Well, what happens if
there's another month after that?
Well, we're not going to play till January 10th.
Yeah.
Well, then so what do they do? Another 8-week program? I don't know.
What do they do now? What are they doing now?
Well, I think right now the best you can do is make an educated plan. And you would also imagine that Aaron Wellman and Tom Allen probably know things you and I don't.
Totally.
So I think the best you can do right now is make an educated plan. It is interesting to me. We have seen I will say this based on what I have heard. I think the two sort of clearest possibilities for the resumption of Big Ten football are either around Thanksgiving or sometime in the new year, you know, possibly like January. It is interesting to me that an 8-week program would take you up to the week before Halloween, which in theory is about 4 weeks before Thanksgiving. And that's the amount of time you would need for a full preseason camp. So I think the best you can do is try and plan for something like that right now. And certainly, you know, one of the things that struck me in talking to Aaron Wellman was he never got an offseason. He was hired in early March. They'd canceled all spring sports and sent everybody home by the time Indiana officially announced him. Obviously, he got some time with these guys in a sort of more limited setting back in the summer. But this is his first chance, even if the protocols maybe change the way things work day to day a little bit. This is his first chance at a genuine offseason with this roster. So I think that really the way you got to look at it if you're him is say, with the best information we've got, we think we've got 8 solid weeks here where we can take these guys that have maybe, you know, are coming from all different points in the fitness spectrum because of the time that they lost in the weight room, that we got some of it back in the summer, but even then we had to pause for a while because of positive tests. We're going to use those 8 weeks to get these guys as built as we possibly can, and hopefully near the end of that period, we will have more information to make another really solid sort of plan going forward.
Zach Osterman's our guest. We've got about a minute left. I want to ask you this hypothetical before we leave. The Big Ten has been knocked here recently for its transparency issues, perhaps, and how we got to this decision. As we move forward, do you think that transparency, the curtain is pulled back a little bit, or is this one day you're going to wake up and look in your inbox and bam, there's going to be a press release. Here's when the football season's going to start.
I certainly don't think that anybody's going to sneak up on it that way, because everybody around the conference that has been pushing some sort of agenda has been leaking like a sieve. And so I think it's going to get out at some point. Now, you know, how discernible maybe the truth is when we finally have a solid truth from the rumor and the innuendo, I don't know. That could be tricky. I also think that there's going to be parts of this that the Big Ten is just going to have to be transparent about. Like, for example, we're seeing the Pac-12 right now talking about in depth about this testing plan that they're implementing. Before the Big Ten goes back to competition, one would imagine they are going to have to talk in depth about some of these things and publicly about some of these things. So I think that there are going to be sort of signposts along the way that lead us to that point. You would hope, quite frankly, that not so much Kevin Warren — I've said this before — Kevin Warren serves the presidents and chancellors who make this final decision. You would hope, though, that the conference leadership structure is more open about the process that gets us back to football than the one that took us away from it.
Yeah, it's more excitable in the other direction, right?
Yeah, I think they owe it to their fans. I think they owe it to, frankly, their coaches and players. And more than anything else, I just think it'll make their lives a little bit easier. I think there's things they're just going to have to talk about, and they're going to want to talk about. They're going to want to talk about if they have some, you know, great new testing plan. They're going to want to talk about if they're able to build some quasi-bubble and play games in NFL stadiums. Those are going to be achievements they want to trumpet. But I think it would, as much as anything else, just lessen the headache for them if they are more open about it.
Great job as always, my friend. We love the insight. We love the information. We'll do it again next Thursday.
Sounds good, Glass.